Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Langwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, especially the joy that comes from sharing that love with someone. Hope you've done that. I can wish you still, in my religious tradition, we're still celebrating Christmas throughout this week until the Feast of the Baptism of Jesus next Sunday. So I can say to you, Merry Christmas, and especially Merry Christmas to those Orthodox members who are celebrating on January 7th. Not as many, but the Russian Orthodox and others will be celebrating their Christmas, and also a happy and blessed New Year to all of you. As we do each week, I'd like to begin a program with a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination. Men who were considered to be wise often came to visit Jesus when they heard about his great knowledge. "Welcome," Jesus said to a man who had made such a journey from his hometown. "I've heard about your love for others." The man was surprised by Jesus' remark, but quickly replied, "And I've heard about how much you do for others, Master." Having traded compliments, they smiled at one another. Jesus said, "Come, sit with me." The man was pleased and said, "I'll share my fruit with you." Jesus responded, "And I'll share my bread with you. But I know you have not come just to eat with me. You have come seeking knowledge, and I'm pleased to give it to you." The man nodded and said, "You are wise indeed." Then he just looked at Jesus, and it seemed like an eternity before he finally spoke again and asked, "Master, is man divided in two?" Jesus didn't answer right away, and so the man asked again, "Master, is there not a physical side to man and a spiritual side? Does not the spiritual side draw life from the heart of the Father?" "Yes," Jesus answered. "And does not the spiritual side tell the physical side what to do?" "No," Jesus answered. "They must work together. Man does not always do what his heart wants him to do, to comfort the sick or to share one's bread. The physical and the spiritual must work together as one, like the fish is to water, air to a cloud, a seed to the earth, fruit to a tree, and a mother to her child." The wise man looked at the bread Jesus had shared with him and said, "The bread you have given me has more meaning than the eye can see, doesn't it?" "Yes," Jesus answered. "Not only is it the staff of life, it is also the bond which unites the heavens and the earth." Then the old man said, "You are wise far beyond your years. It has taken me so long to learn what you have learned in such a short time." Jesus sighed and said, My friend, man must work to attain a perfect union between his body, mind, heart, and soul. Such a union will give man the strength and gentle caring which my Father's love possesses." The man smiled and started to give the remaining bread back to Jesus, who said, "No, my friend, take it, for you have a long journey ahead of you. When you eat it, think of me. And when I return home, I shall tell my Father that there are still many mysteries in the world that man has not solved, but that some men use their entire being, body, mind, heart, and soul, to do his will." A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening, you'll be glad that he's back, you've always enjoyed him, writes in the second chapter of his latest book. It's titled In Pursuit of Health and Longevity, subtitled Wellness Pioneers Through the Centuries. With the widespread public interest in physical fitness, it has somehow been overlooked that Jesus was an amazingly physical Messiah. In an age that worships a flock of phony cartoon superheroes, Jesus was the ultimate action superhero 2,000 years ago. He was a man of great stamina who walked everywhere between the villages of the Holy Land on his ministry of salvation. And there is no record he ever rode a horse, a camel, or a carriage, though he did once enter Jerusalem on a donkey, displaying an ironic sense of humor. He regularly traveled over hills and climbed mountains. He fished. From time to time, Jesus worked as a carpenter, and so was surely lean and muscular, contrasting dramatically with the sedentary clergy of his times. He enjoyed the company of children so much, it wouldn't be surprising if he joined them in their games. He was not a bodybuilder, growing his muscles with weights for show in front of mirrors. Jesus' physical fitness was used in the service of others. Jesus, the great physician, the healer, was supremely healthy, robust, loving, and joyful. Would God have sent us an obese, sickly, depressive Messiah for our salvation? Who would have listened to him? He was a layman. He was the ultimate health reformer. Jesus, in numerous ways, reminds us again in the Gospels that God made the body to be used in the service of others. Jesus came to us with a message of salvation through both spiritual and physical fitness. The writer of those words and our guest this evening is Cal Samra, a humor and health historian. He's the founding editor and publisher of the Joyful Newsletter, a national humor newsletter for about 34 years. And it's provided jokes that pastors can tell and reproducible cartoons for church editors of all faith traditions. The Joyful Newsletter has received awards of excellence from the Associated Press, the Catholic Press Association, the Evangelical Press Association, and others. And prior to his debut as a humorist, Cal had an extensive experience as a newspaper journalist. In the 1960s, he served as a lay executive director and newsletter editor of what became the Huxley Institute for Biosocial Research, named in honor of St. Julian Huxley and his brother Adolphus Huxley. The institute had a distinguished board of psychiatric researchers exploring the physiology, biochemistry, nutritional factors, and severe mental illnesses. And so Cal was writing about that. He is the author of a dozen humor books. His book, The Joyful Christ, The Healing Power of Humor, published in HarperCollins in 1985, and he was a guest on our program when that was published back in 1985, launched The Joyful Newsletter after many pastors and church editors requested a newsletter that would provide them with clean humor and cartoons on a regular basis. His keen interest has always been physical fitness, organic gardening, and nutrition. And next to his Christian faith and family, tennis is his great love. We'll find out why. And at the age of 87, that's when he wrote this book, this court jester still plays tennis with his aging but young at heart friends four times a week. Cal Samra, welcome back to Amplify.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Father Ron. Thank you so much for that lovely story that you gave us at the beginning. And thank you for inviting me back to your marvelous program. It's always good to be here with you.
As I just mentioned, you're not a physician or a medical professional, but you do have some background for a book of this kind. What inspired you then to write this book, and does it have any relationship with your highly successful book, The Joyful Christ, The Healing Power of Humor?
Well, Father, we started out, it's amazing that we're still survived after 34 years. It's all, I think, the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit has carried us through, notwithstanding my own incompetence and bungling from time to time. But we started out basically to provide some more humor and joy to people of all denominations. And we're very much of an ecumenical organization. But we were inspired from the beginning by that great Catholic humorist, G.K. Chesterton, who said, angels can fly because they take themselves lightly.
Yes,
I have never forget that the devil fell by force of gravity. That sort of inspired us right away to do. People were wondering, we need a little more humor and laughter and joy in our society. I mean, we're swamped, I think, increasingly by an avalanche of bad news from all directions, including social media. And so we were looking. We have a whole bunch of really wonderful Christian cartoonists of all faith traditions and humorists and clowns and what have you have contributed to us through the years. I was also, or we were, shall I say, were there was one scripture at the Last Supper that just, when I read it, it just blew my mind away. And this is from John 15:11. And this is sort of inspired us greatly. But Jesus said to his disciples at the time, I have told you this so that my own joy will be in you and your joy may be complete. That blew me away because this is the Last Supper. He is talking about joy, knowing that he is about ready within a day or two to be humiliated and beaten and tortured and terrible suffering and then finally crucified, and yet he's talking about joy. That just struck me. It had a tremendous impact on me when I read that. I mean, who but the Messiah could have said something, could be talking about joy under those circumstances? And so we sort of functioned along those lines for quite a while, Father, focusing mainly on humor. But then we found quite a few medical doctors and counselors and physical therapists and nutritionists had become subscribers to the Joyful Noise Letters. We found that they started contributing, writing articles for us on health and on physical fitness and on diet. And we started, I guess that sort of inspired this book this latest book that I've done. Mm-hmm. We took a lot of the material that we had published in the Joyful Noise Letter and turned it into my new book, In Pursuit of Health and Longevity. We thought we should share that. There's some really remarkable stories, and when we look back into the history of a lot of these folks in this book are medical doctors.
Right, we're going to talk about some of them. Yes, we are. Go ahead.
Yeah, going way. Am I talking too much? Or
No.
To not only Jesus and the apostles, these are religious figures of all denominations. St. Cosmas and St. Damian, who are both Catholic, and the Greek physicians, who are both the third century, were both Catholic and Orthodox saints.
Called the holy physicians.
I guess they call them the unmercenary physicians because they never charged anybody.
Right.
For them, but they were involved heavily. Well, they were surgeons, but they were also strongly, heavily involved in looking after their patients' bodies as well in their nutrition and their physical fitness. They were also very strong in advocating that their patients follow the fast and abstinent days of the church, of the Catholic and the Orthodox Church. At that time, they were the same. And Then, you know, going all the way down to the century, the St. Francis of Assisi, and then down to John Wesley, who was an amazing, he could have been a physician. He pretty much followed the same. He was big on exercise. He rode horseback constantly, but he was big on physical activity and nutrition, diet, nutrition. That was very important to him. And he even wrote a book on it in the 18th century for his pastors and for the poor, because he said a lot of these people in England at the time couldn't afford doctors. So he wrote a book in lay terms so that these people could follow that, very simple terms of trying following a healthy lifestyle. And then it carries on to the 19th century with Ellen White of the Seventh-day Adventists, and who incidentally took over much of John Wesley's program of nutrition and physical exercise. She had been raised in it as an Adventist, as a Methodist, before she founded the Adventist. So she took over a lot of his health suggestions. And then, of course, the famous Dr. John Harvey Kellogg came out of that group, and the Battle Creek Sanitarium, the famous Battle Creek Sanitarium here. That he took over a lot of the same ideas, and we right into the 19th and the 20th century. What amazed me is both all of these different faith traditions. Some of them were conservative, some of them were liberals, but what amazed me when I was writing this book is how much they agreed on as far as living a healthy life. Some conservatives, some liberals, some Protestants, some Catholics, some Greek Orthodox, but they were saying maybe the same thing. And we've lost a lot of
that wisdom
through the centuries.
Yeah, I'm sitting here smiling, Cal, because I'm saying, well, Kel, thank you for your book. You've told us all about it. Thanks for being with us. Hope to see you next time. Oh, no, you said a lot. No, that's not to be critical. I do want to jump back a little bit, because you basically eat a Mediterranean diet, and you your mother had fed that mostly to you.
My mother is really...
But here's a question I want to get to.
She cooked out of Greek and Lebanese dishes, and she's a fantastic cook. But I was never sick a day in my life all the time I was eating her
right.
foods, her old country foods. Then when I went off and to New York as a newspaper man, I left and I started living on TV dinners and smoking and getting no exercise and eating fast foods and just got away from all the fresh foods and organic foods that she had raised me on. I got sick as a dog, and I
right.
was sick for several years. And then my mother steered me back to the Mediterranean diet. But the fascinating thing about this, Father Ron, is a friend of mine just sent me the latest issue, the newest issue of U.S. News and World Report,
mm-hmm.
and they had a panel of medical doctors and nutritionists who studied 41 different diets worldwide and ranked them as the best diet, the healthiest diet, and guess what number one was?
It goes without saying, right?
Diet.
Mediterranean.
The Mediterranean diet, which my mother raised me on, you know.
But my point that I wanted to get to was what kind of diet do you believe that Jesus, because you deal with this in your book, what might Jesus have eaten, and do you think that what he ate was influenced by his mother Mary?
Oh, well, he was raised on kosher foods, for instance. They ate no pork or ham, you know. He was raised on kosher foods, right? As a boy and as a young man. And, of course, he was very physically active. But he ate a Mediterranean diet.
Yes.
Now, U.S. News and World Report didn't touch on that aspect of it. They always sort of skirt, the Jews had a marvelous diet, too, a healthy diet. The Hebrews, as Daniel, the story of Daniel points out, he was one of the earliest health reformers, health pioneers, and so he was raised. He probably ate pretty much. He would have loved my mother's cooking. I know that.
Yes,
he ate
right.
Pretty much. You know, they ate a lot of fresh foods, and everybody kept in those days, and they still do. My mother kept an organic garden. She had a lot of medicinal herbs that she used to cook with her foods. And I'm sure Mary had the same thing, probably, because that's typical. Even today, the Mediterranean, Italy and Greece and Lebanon, those areas, they have organic. Pretty much, they tend to organic gardens, you know, free of pesticides and all of that sort of thing.
Plus, it was made with Mary's love, also.
Exactly,
love is an important ingredient.
Absolutely, the most important ingredient is love. There's no question about that. But then there was also, she cooked. Mary had to have cooked everything she did with love. I mean, she wasn't going to feed her Messiah son on trash. You know what I mean?
Right.
She was gonna give him the very best quality food she could possibly give him.
Yeah, we believe, for example, that Jesus ate in moderation, and also that he fasted and prayed frequently, and that he often sought quiet and rest. And so, you point out, you write, and I want to. People to know how it is you write, because you're a great writer. Yes, let me just
very
read a
balanced,
right.
You know,
let me. No, I need to read a sentence. We're coming up to our first break.
Don't let me talk over.
No,
you.
I'm not.
I tend to. Be
I'm talking over
day.
You. I'm talking over you. But you said Mary was a masterful nutritionist and cooker. Nutritional knowledge and knowledge of medicinal herbs had been handed down for centuries from mothers to daughters, and Mary was not about to raise her Messiah son on junk food. So we're going to take this break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Cal Samra about his book, The Pursuit of Health and Longevity. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is Cal Samra. He'd been with me the first time back in 1985. I remember I used to talk to his wife about the newsletter, and when we talked about the program also. In your book, Cal, again, In Pursuit of Health and Longevity, you talk about how a CBS 60 Minutes documentary on the monks of Mount Athos reported that the monks have a remarkable longevity, and, quote, there is no evidence of cancer, heart disease, or Alzheimer's among them. And why is that, according to them?
Well, I think it has something to do with the Mediterranean diet, but they stay very physically active. And they're very spiritual, and they follow the fast days, the fast and abstinence days of the church. Again, related to that, Father Stylianos Maxouris was a friend of mine here in Kalamazoo. He was, at the time, the Greek Orthodox pastor here and priest in Kalamazoo, the Kalamazoo Orthodox Church. And he was a friend of mine, and we did a story about him in the Joyful Noise letter, which is in this book, and I think it relates to all of this. He is now, of course, you know, Metropolitan Savas of the Greek metropolis of Greek Orthodox metropolis of Pittsburgh. I'm sure you know him.
I do.
Now, in the book, we mentioned that, for instance, you know, he's a fascinating guy. He's a beautiful man. He emigrated from Greece, but, you know, he has a cell phone program to play Beethoven's Ode to Joy whenever someone calls him. even if the voice on the other end is whining or complaining, the music reminds the priest that the eternal God remains a God of peace and joy. When he told me about that, it just cracked me up. Anyway, he's been a powerful advocate for physical fitness. In 1998, this is in the book, he tipped the scale at over 260 pounds and his blood pressure readings shot upwards. He became concerned that his love for rich processed foods and sugars and a sedentary lifestyle were damaging his health. He cut out junk food and soda pop and ate lighter balanced meals with cereals, salads, and fruit. He also began walking 3 miles a day. He came back and really cut huge amounts of poundage off of him, and he's in good shape now. But he also developed a great appreciation for the Orthodox Church's numerous fast and food abstinence days. You know, that's just one example. I mean, it fits in with the monks as well. But he said, as I lost weight, my mood also improved. When I was heavier, I used to be more irritable. Things would bother me that don't bother me now. I discovered that the body affects the mind, and the mind affects the body. You know, that says it all, really.
So there's a spiritual side to good health, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And I think this is a reason. I think Jesus clearly recognized that. Because he recommended to his disciples that they fast occasionally, not prolonged 30 or 40 day fast, but you know, short fasts. And I think that's the basis for the abstinence days in the fast days in both the Roman Catholic and the Orthodox tradition. Here's something fascinating to me that we're carrying in our current issue. A Protestant medical doctor and nutritionist, this is Dr. Don Colbert of Florida, wrote recently, he said, Americans are exposed to more than 80,000 toxic chemicals every day, indicated by figures issued by the Environmental Protection Agency. Doctors and scientists just don't know what the impact of all these chemicals will be on the human body and brain over the years. Dr. Colbert and other doctors are exploring ways to eliminate toxic chemicals from your body, including the old Jewish and Christian practice of occasional short fasts. He recommends every couple of weeks or so, a juice fast. You know, it's right. Easier to handle a juice fast than a water fast. It's not easy. Another one I knew when I was with the Huxley Institute, a friend of mine, Dr. Alan Cott, he's a New York psychiatrist. He did a report on how Russian psychiatrists who were generally hostile to religion had helped many institutionalized Russian mental patients by putting them on occasional short fasts. And the irony of it is that it was a centuries-old short fast, or a centuries-old liturgical practice of the Russian Orthodox Church, as it has been for many Orthodox and Catholic churches.
Right.
We've sort of gotten away from that. Modern Christianity has gotten away from these, but I think they were sound health principles.
You pointed out it earlier in the program that John Wesley was prophetic and made a valiant effort to restore the healing ministry of Jesus on health matters. And you write about Martin Luther in the book also, who you said had a fantastic sense of humor, but a lousy diet. And you quote so many other people, Ben Franklin. I didn't know this. I celebrate the Feast of St. Basil. He's in our liturgical calendar, and it wasn't so long ago. I didn't know that Basil was named after him. That's the first time that I realized that, and I like Basil.
He was named after who?
St. Basil. The herb basil was named after St. Basil. Yeah. If that's wrong, that's what you said in your book.
Yes, basil. As a matter of fact, the Catholic and the Orthodox churches established were the first ones who established hospitals for the poor and,
right.
and for the sick. I mean, this goes back centuries, and they had fasts. They had the patients in those monasteries and hospitals they grew organic foods in those days. In those days, they were not pesticides, you know, and stuff. What concerns me, and I think possibly the theme that runs throughout my book is what I'm concerned about, and quite a few people are increasingly, the young people, the millennials are especially increasingly concerned about the ongoing pollution of our air, water, and even our food supply in this society. Another saintly person, Catholic, Catherine Doherty.
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with her.
Yes, I am. She's one.
The Canadian, the Madonna House. They have farms, and for years they've been promoting organic gardening, you know, organic farming out there in Canada at the Madonna House. I'd love to visit there sometime. I hope one day I'll be able to. But she's one of these wellness pioneers mm-hmm. that I mentioned in this book.
Tell us a little bit about what does St. Francis of Assisi have to do with health?
Well, I think more than the Franciscans the early Franciscans really were very, they were health minded. I mean, they followed all the fast days of the church back in those days, and the fast days and the abstinence days where they stayed away from meat and sweets and stuff like that. But they were very physically active. They were constantly on the move, and really very merry-hearted and with a great sense of humor. Generally, St. Francis had a wonderful sense of humor, and there are a lot of elements, healing elements that we've lost a lot of. The healing power of humor is very important. The healing
sure.
power of diet, of nutrition, of physical activity. There are a lot of principles that the church, that were rooted in the church earlier, that we lost, you know, you know, they would sing and dance. St. Francis said at one time, I think it went, one point he said he was amazed that the Lord had given him the power to sing and dance on this dunghill, which he thought much of the world was. But he was able. They were really a merry-hearted lot, and that was very healing.
And you write in your book that we are in the midst of a worldwide obesity epidemic. Statistics indicate that 30% of Americans are now obese or overweight, and in two decades, 95% of all Americans will be obese or overweight, and many will have diabetes. In two decades, it will be difficult to find a passing lane on city sidewalks. So, and then you have this report from Jim Landers in the Dallas Morning News who wrote, clogged arteries and sedentary lifestyles have replaced germs as the world's leading killers. Where hunger once held much of the world in its grip, the number of overweight and obese people, 1.6 billion, now outnumber those who are malnourished 2-1. And so we're talking about a real problem, aren't we?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And, you know, the ironic thing about it is that the young people are recognizing this more and more, especially the millennials who, you know, I hear so many pastors of all faith traditions complain that, you know, the young people aren't showing up in church. We're losing the millennials and everything. But you know, the young people, the millennials, they're moving in the areas like yoga, which has its value. They're interested in that. They're interested in good health. They're interested in organic foods. They're interested not only in how to get to heaven, but how to live a healthy life in this world and survive in this world, you know. And I think that the church, in order to get them back, are going to have to focus not only on the joy of the Lord and the humor of the Lord, but also on his focus on health and staying healthy in this life. I think the early Christians had that, and somehow we've lost it. From time to time in every century, somebody tries to revive it.
Yes.
Whether it's
that's what you said about Mary Baker Eddy. Their program on Christian Science Churches usually follows this program. You write that she returned to primitive Christianity and its lost element of healing. And then the 20th century, you write about President Theodore Roosevelt was one. And you already mentioned G.K. Chesterton. And
yeah,
you mentioned
the Food and Drug Administration.
Yes.
Teddy Roosevelt did, and you know, at that time, because our meat supply had gotten corrupted. But I think we need another Teddy Roosevelt today. I mean, who can challenge all this air and water and food pollution that's going on in our society, and you know, I just too many people I see are ailing in the churches, Father Ron. I see too many people ailing. They're suffering, and that has to be addressed. That has to be addressed. Help them to get into live a happier and healthier life,
so that they can so that they can be a part of the healthy centenarians that you write about in one chapter. And tell us about the term that is now being used, the blue zones. The United States is not one of them now, but used to be the blue zones.
Well, interestingly enough, Loma Linda, the blue zones are about the National Geographic commissioned Dan Buettner and a whole bunch of medical scientists in all disciplines. This was several years ago, to go to the countries where they found where people were the longest lived and the healthiest, and where they're more centenarians, you know. And they had a whole bunch interdisciplinary group of scientists and medical doctors. One of them was a village in Okinawa. Another one was in Costa Rica, a Catholic community in Costa Rica. Another one was in a Catholic community in Sardinia. Another one was a Greek Orthodox community in the island of Icaria. And another one was a Seventh-day Adventist community in Loma Linda,
yes.
You know. And they found that these people had different faith traditions, but they all basically had the same things. He did a wonderful book called The Blue Zones. And these zones were the centenarians. There were centenarians, so many centenarians, whatever. They were all... you know, they were places where they just didn't have any of the diseases that Americans, they didn't,
right.
Cancer was rare among them. Alzheimer's was rare, diabetes, heart disease, all of these things were rare, and they were living, but they found that whatever their faith tradition was, they had several things in common. A sense of community, a sense of they'd get together and laugh a lot, for one. That They live primarily on a plant-based diet, which was mainly vegetarian. They ate fish too, of course, but they made
hugging and kissing their extended families a priority, and cultivated loving and caring relationships with their families and friends. Their families
Absolutely.
Gave them purpose in life, and they honored their elders. That sounds like they were following, you know, that's what we should be following as Christians.
Exactly. That's it. Exactly. Well, some of them are Christians. Some of them,
yes.
these blue zones, they call them the blue zones, were Christians, you know, or are Christians still today, but they were practicing their religion, you know, and they're practicing fasting. They practice fasting in their fast days and abstinence days in their churches, but they also, you know, they kept a very positive attitude, and they loved to laugh. They'd get together and tell jokes and just entertain themselves, you know. And
they didn't overdose. They didn't overdose on sugar, did they? You point out that one doctor estimated that of the 600,000 processed foods in supermarkets, 80% of them have sugar. Why do we have to be concerned about overdosing on sugar?
Well, it's a great way to get fat, Katie. But we don't know. They put sugar in everything. We don't know.
Right.
And so many of these processed foods that they have in the grocery stores are packed with sugar just to make them taste better, you know. And we have this obesity problem among little kids, which is very sad. It's hard to return. Katie Couric did a wonderful documentary on that not long ago. There's so many angles to this. You know, it's not, health is not a simple matter. I mean, there are a lot of factors involved in it. Martin Luther did a lot of great things, but he sort of neglected the health and the fasting and aspect of it. But you know, he had a great appreciation for the healing power of humor. He said, I think at one point he said that he made the remark that you have as much faith as you have laughter.
Yes.
Which blew me away. Also, he had a great feeling for the healing power of music. I mean, he composed a lot of beautiful hymns really encouraged congregational singing, but then he was not infallible. You know, in his own life, the last 10 years of his life, he was really he had just about every disease in the book the last 10 years of his life. He just didn't live on a good day, and the fasting did not, he didn't incorporate that. He took a lot from the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church in his liturgy, but he didn't incorporate any of he totally neglected the fasting and the abstinence days and of the importance of regular exercise, and he suffered later as a result of that.
Before we break for in another 4 minutes for the news, say a little bit about our concern about genetically engineered food and environmental pollution. You discuss this in your book also.
Oh, that's a huge thing. I mean, it's amazing. Now, I'm from Flint originally. And that was my hometown, Flint, Michigan. And you know about the terrible...
Yes, the water, yeah.
The water pollution there. I remember the Flint River was frankly... I mean, it was... I remember it as almost a black river from all of the pollution there. And how they could ever get drinking water out of that, I don't know. But that was a great tragedy. But you know, the thing is the a lot of the media, the pastors just did not catch on. Only one pastor protested that. An African American pastor protested what was going on, and it was generally ignored by all the other pastors what was going on there, and that lead is deadly to people's brains, kids' brains, in the water and the pipelines, but a lot of the clergy rallied to them and sent them water. Clean water afterwards, bottles of clean water, but they seem to be a little reluctant sometimes, the clergy of all faith traditions, to be concerned about what this pollution, air, water, and food pollution is doing to their to the health of their congregations. You would think that would be one of their primary interests, you know.
Yeah, you talked about in the book about Dr. Russer Blaylock, a highly regarded neurosurgeon who taught surgical procedures to medical school students, and he was devastated by some of the things were happening to some of his patients, and discovered that
his own parents died as a result of it, you know.
And he saw it to be many diseases can be found in certain foods, chemicals, food additives, various toxins and environmental hazards, as you've just been talking about, and he became an expert in the use of nutrition as therapy for chronic degenerative disorders. So there are people who know about these things and are trying to do something about it.
Some of them are MDs. They are trying to do, and these are among the wellness pioneers I mentioned in the book. Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, of course, in the last century was very much, he did a lot of wonderful things, and his hospitals were full of people that came to him in Battle Creek, the Battle Creek Sand. It was more famous than the Mayo Clinic at one time.
Cal, let me break in here if you hold your thought, because we're coming up to a break, and let me close with this quote that you have from Samuel Johnson. Some people have a foolish way of not minding or pretending not to mind what they eat. For my part, I mind my belly very studiously and very carefully, for I look upon it that he who does not mind his belly will hardly mind anything else. We'll take this break. Welcome back to the second hour of Amplify, where our guest is Cal Samra. We're talking about his book, In Pursuit of Health and Longevity, Wellness Pioneers Through the Centuries. In one of his book, it's called, quote-unquote, Slow Food Days. A young friend asked me the other day, what was your favorite fast food when you were growing up? We didn't have fast food when I was growing up, I replied. All the food was slow. Seriously, where did you eat? He asked. I explained, it was a place called home. Mom cooked every day, and when Dad got home from work, we sat down together at the dining room table and prayed before eating. My mother saw to it that we always had healthy, fresh foods on the table, and if I didn't like what she put on my plate, I was allowed to sit there until I did like it. My young friend was laughing so hard, I didn't tell him the part about how I had to have permission to leave the dinner table. That was my case, too. I needed permission. In fact, I had to wait till everyone was done, and I didn't always like my older sister. She was the older of my two sisters, who ate very slowly. So I couldn't get anywhere until she was done. It's just a way of saying that we're going to continue to talk about the book during the until the next break at 10:30, and then we're going to spend the last 20 minutes or so going through some of the favorite humorous situations that Cal Samra has in the book. And we'll spend the last 20 minutes doing that after we've talked about the healing power of humor, which we're going to do pretty soon. But I just wanted to begin with that slow dates and slow food dates. And in the book, he also has the Ten Commandments for health care and a list of enlightened athletes in pursuit of health and happiness. And there's a lot to refer to in the book about, he talks about Trader Joe's and Aldi and so many other things in this particular part of the book. And while I'm saying that, Cal, if people wanted a copy of the book, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, you can get it several places. You can write to you can go to our email address for our website, www.joyfulnoiseletter.com, and when you go to that, you'll see where you can order the book on our website, or you can order it from Barnes and Noble or various Christian bookstores as well.
The Ten Commandments for Health, Ida Dale Hornsteiner's: avoid addictions, do not idolize your body, do not devalue God's name, live a balanced life, cultivate your roots and you will grow, do not obstruct the flow of life, don't go after less and expect more, don't fake living, don't mistreat anyone, don't compare yourself with others. Amplify a little bit on one of those, Cal.
Etta is a remarkable woman. She's an African-American woman who is, she's a friend of ours. She's also one of the consulting editors of the Joyful Noise Letter. And she's a physical therapist. I'm trying to remember which college she was at, the one in Virginia. She was an instructor there.
Regent University.
Regent University, yes. And she studied the Ten Commandments, and from a standpoint of a physical therapist, and she saw what she saw in there was in those commandments, both spiritual and physical avenues to health in the Ten Commandments, and her conclusion, she's a Christian, her conclusion is the Ten Commandments and Jesus's advice to his disciples was basically it was an avenue to good health if it were followed. If they were followed, you know.
Yeah, she went so far to say that she believes that they're the foundation of any health and wellness program, and that they are there to lead us to good health, not just spiritual health, but also physical and mental health. And so she sees the Ten Commandments
exactly.
In terms of our entire being. Let's jump to the whole question about the healing power of prayer and humor, and because let's talk about the healing power of humor. Let's jump to that. Why don't you tell the story?
The
story about Barney, the Pittsburgher who I knew. Tell the story about Barney.
Yeah, I remember you told me you knew him, Barney.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Everybody knew Barney. But you tell the story about him on page 170, and I can tell it if you'd like to tell it. Okay, you write that there was this restaurant. It was in kind of an alley here in Pittsburgh between two of the main thoroughfares, and he was very humorous, but he was very much a Christian. He happened to be a Catholic. Had friends everywhere, and he had this little restaurant there. Weren't many seats in it, but every time they would come in, he would announce their name on a loudspeaker. terms of who was there. And then you write that one day one of Barney's friends was eating his dinner at a table when he suddenly clutched his chest, keeled over, and tumbled to the floor, his face ashen. Barney asked a waiter to call an ambulance, rushed to his side, and cradled him in his arms. Barney whispered in his ear, "You're going to be okay, Sam. Have you paid your check?" And the man laughed and laughed. He couldn't stop laughing. And with that, the complexion on his face changed. And with some help, he got to his feet, still laughing, assuring everyone he felt fine. But while he was still laughing, they took him on a stretcher to the hospital. And it was Barney, one of the stories about him. He was in downtown Pittsburgh, and someone needed a pair of shoes. And so he took off his shoes and gave his shoes to that man and walked bare in his socks until we had. Tell us a little bit about the healing power of humor so that when we get to the bottom of the hour after the news, we will tell some stories.
Well, you know, as I mentioned, Martin Luther said, you have as much faith as you have laughter, or was it, you have as much laughter as you have faith. And he recognized the healing power of humor, and quite a few of the saints recognize it too. One of our consulting editors and good friends, and he is one of the what I consider a wellness pioneer, is Dr. Patch Adams, who's an MD. And of course, I assume that you've seen his movie Patch Adams, but he's an MD who he has an interesting life, has had an interesting lifestyle. Before he became an MD, he was in Washington, and he was taking things so seriously about everything. He got very depressed, and he ended up in a mental hospital. And there he really experienced deep depression. Then he realized after a while that he lost his sense of humor.
Yes.
And so he set out cultivating his sense of humor again, and looking at things in the lighter side. And also he's become quite an advocate for humor in medicine, in the medical profession. Now he's invited all over the place. He's also a great believer in organic gardening and the physical fitness and physical side of things. But he's a delightful man, and he really I think he sort of set the pace for the renewal of interest in the sense of humor as a healing force in the medical profession. But I have a little anecdote here that is one of my favorites. Do you mind if I tell it?
No, go ahead. I thought you were going
to. Okay. All right. Walking home from church, a woman saw a little old man smiling in a rocking chair on a porch. She walked up to him and said, "I couldn't help noticing how happy you look," she said. "What is your secret for a long, happy life?" "Well, ma'am," he replied, "I smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day, drink seven six-packs of beer a week, eat fatty and greasy fast foods, and never exercised." "Amazing," the woman said. "How old are you?" 27, he said.
Yes. There's a lot of substantial quotes from Reverend Jack Hinson about the healing power of humor, and then also from Cheryl B. Fell. In terms of Reverend Hinson, he says, for example, "Joy surprises us and cracks open our self-made tombs to invite us to see the world through God's grace." Isn't that what Easter is all about? And he also says, "Joy rises up to produce humility. Joy is a sign of the truly redeemed spirit that gives life its most intense energy. Joy is the work of God's grace within us, reminding us of the Christ who said, I have spoken this to you so that my joy may be in you and your joy complete. We could reflect on that for a long time. He also says, joy enables us to let go of the dark and foreboding events that tend to color life in shades of gray. Joy opens up new avenues of courage and confidence and spills over into a sense of adventure. And joy releases us from the need to put ourselves in the center of everything, isolating us from one another. In our seriousness, we become full of seriousness. We become full of ourselves, our anxiety, our agony, our loneliness, and our emptiness. Our joy draws us together to help one another. And he was a chaplain in a hospital. Why don't you say something on pages 180? Go ahead.
Chaplain Henson wrote a wonderful book along those lines. He's one of our consulting editors. He's a Baptist chaplain in North Carolina, and he has a marvelous book along those lines with that theme. He changed his chaplaincy dramatically by helping his patients by lightening them up and speaking about the joy of the gospel and helping them recover their sense of humor. He just changed things around dramatically in that Baptist hospital.
His title was "Laughter Was God's Idea."
Yeah, that's the title of the book. It's an excellent. We carry that book but one of my favorite stories is of course East Catholic Yogi Berra. One of my favorite stories about him is that Carmen Berra, his Yogi Berra's wife, once asked him, "Yogi, you are from St. Louis. We live in New Jersey, and you played baseball in New York. If you go before I do, where would you like to be buried?" "Surprise me," Yogi
yes,
answered.
Surprise me.
What a fantastic sense of humor that the man had. I mean, you know.
let me go to Cheryl B. Fell. The subtitle is Exercise Your Funny Bone. She urges patients to do that, and she's made some of these observations about the healing power of laughter. She writes, laughter.
She's a nurse.
Yeah, she's a nurse, an RN. "Laughter is the cheapest form of over-the-counter medicine. It doesn't cost a penny. Laughter doesn't require a prescription, a referral from your primary physician, or pre-certification from your HMO, PPO, or CEO. Laughter is an old-fashioned remedy that is still recommended today." And I think all of these things teach us a lot about the healing power of laughter. "Laughter is like a miracle drug without side effects. There is one warning: laughter may cause a temporary on-the-edge hangover. Laughter does not require batteries. One heartfelt laugh will recharge your funny bone for hours. There is no heavy lifting or shin splints involved with laughter. Several hearty laughs a day chases the blues far away. Laughter is the best kept dieting secret because silliness is soul food with zero calories. Humor is as essential is oxygen for survival," and that's two more. "Laughter gives one a shot of energy and transfusion of hope. Laughter is like internal jogging. 20 seconds of genuine laughter is equal to approximately 3 minutes of rowing." Just so much there to be able to reflect on.
Oh, yes, indeed. She is something.
And there is something to say also about the healing power of prayer, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Loving
Absolutely.
Care, prayer and loving care.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's so there's so many. You know, the church had all the elements of healing. You know, and but you know, Irma Bombeck. Of course, she was Catholic, but one of my favorite observations of hers. You know, she was so funny. We all miss her, but she said, "Never go to a doctor whose office plants have died."
Yes, right, right.
Yeah,
and there's this quote from Catherine Marshall. Many preachers has emphasized Christ as the man of sorrows, but have almost completely ignored the fact that Jesus loved people, loved to mingle with them, and had a rare sense of humor.
And absolutely.
And so you know, there's just so much to be able to say about the healing power of humor. And it seems like we've lost it today. We've gotten so sarcastic about it, about life in so many ways that we fail to see the humor.
Absolutely. Well, I've always been persuaded that Jesus had a great sense of humor, because you know, I just don't. I mean, he was supremely joyful, and you know, children were attracted to Jesus. The sick were attracted to Jesus. The sick and children would not have been attracted to a depressive Messiah. You know, I mean, really, would the Lord have sent us a depressive Messiah? You know, and yet even some of our artwork, in both the Protestant and the Catholic and the Orthodox, some of the artwork is depressive. You know, it shows him as like he's sad or sorrowful all the time. But I don't think that's the real Jesus. Of course he suffered. Of course he was sad on occasion. But I see Jesus as a joyful spirit while he lived on this earth, and also. After the resurrection, especially.
And let me say that Cal, in his book In Pursuit of Health and Longevity, at the end of each chapter has reflections about humor and about laughter. And here's a couple here. Malcolm Muggeridge, laughter indeed is God's therapy. Bob Newhart, people with a sense of humor tend to be less egocentric and more realistic in their view of the world, and more humble in moments of success and less defeated in times of travail. And then Tom Mullen, finding some humor in today's many problems is the next best thing to solving them. That may be, when my Mass is over, I always have a little something to say to give people to do during the course of the day, usually flowing from the scriptures of the day. And I might have to use that one tomorrow morning from Tom Mullen. Find some humor in today's problems. The problems you face today, find some humor in them, because that's the next best thing to solving them. So we've come up to our next break. We're talking with Cal Samra about his book, In Pursuit of Health and Longevity, Wellness Pioneers Through the Centuries. So we're going to take this break, and then we'll be back to tell some more humor. Welcome back to the final segment of Amplify. We have just about 22 minutes until the program ends. And as I had introduced the hour, I said that we would read from some of the anecdotes and jokes that are in the book. There are some of Cal's favorites. He's already told a couple of them. I've marked some off of mine from reading them. So, Cal, why don't I do one and then you do one, and let's go back and forth.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sounds like fun.
Here's the first one. People often use the phrase deadly serious, but never deadly humorous. Here are some of our favorite jokes and anecdotes we've published in the Joyful Noise letter. A man is dying on his deathbed in a Los Angeles hospital. With him are his nurse, his wife, his daughter, and two sons. He knows the end is near, so he says to them, "Sam, I want you to take the Beverly Hills houses. Sylvia, take the apartments over in Los Angeles Plaza. Bernie, I want you to take the offices over in City Center. And Sarah, my dear wife, please take all the residential buildings downtown." All this boggles the nurse's mind. And as the man slips away, she says to the wife, "Ma'am, your husband must have been such a hard-working man to have accumulated so much property." And the wife replies, "Property, schmopperty. The old man had a newspaper route."
So you tell that one so well. That's funny. Okay, here's another one. A man feared his wife wasn't hearing as well as she used to, and he thought she might need a hearing aid. Not quite sure how to approach her, he called the family doctor to discuss the problem. The doctor told him there was a simple, informal test the husband could perform to give the doctor a better idea about her hearing loss. "Here's what you do," said the doctor. "Stand about 40 feet away from her, and in a normal conversational speaking tone, see if she hears you. If not, go to 30 feet, then 20 feet, and so on until you get a response." That evening, his wife was in the kitchen cooking dinner. He said to himself, "I'm about 40 feet away. Let's see what happens." Then in a normal tone, he asked, "Honey, what's for dinner?" No response. So the husband moved closer to the kitchen, about 30 feet from his wife, and repeated, "Honey, what's for dinner?" Still no response. Next, he moved into the dining room, where he was about 20 feet from his wife, and asked, "Honey, what's for dinner?" Again, no response. So he walked up to the kitchen door about 10 feet away. "Honey, what's for dinner?" Again, there was no response. So he walked right up behind her and shouted, "Honey, what's for dinner?" "Fred, for the fifth time, chicken," she shouted.
Yes.
He was the one with a hearing problem.
Yes. Sometimes people don't want to admit it. The one right after that is one of my favorites in this listing here. Maybe because it could apply to me. A drunk wandered into the back of a church in New York. He stumbled toward an usher asking, "How long has the pastor been preaching?" And the usher answered, "About 30 years. "Well, then, I think I'll just stay," said the drunk, adding, "He must be nearly finished." So, we priests often talk too long. The Pope has said we shouldn't talk longer than 10 minutes. I hope he does that himself, but 10 minutes,
That's
he says, is all you need to say.
Tradition.
Yes, right. Your turn.
Okay. A middle-aged man went to his doctor for his annual physical. The doctor examined him carefully and ran a battery of tests on him. Finally, he told the man, "I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Mr. Schmidt, but you only have 6 months to live." The man left the office sadly. 6 months later, he returned to the doctor's office and said, "I'm sorry, doctor, but I can't pay your bill." So the doctor gave him 8 more months. Your turn.
As a courtesy, a pastor took an elderly church member to the local nursing home to seek information about how they determine whether or not an older person should be put in a nursing home. "Well," said the nursing home director, "we fill up a bathtub. Then we offer the person a teaspoon, a teacup, and a bucket to empty the bathtub." "Oh, I understand," said the elderly visitor. "A normal person would use the bucket because it's bigger than the spoon or the teacup. No, said the administrator. A normal person would pull the plug. Do you want a bed near a window?
That one still cracks me up. Okay. The local news station was interviewing, this actually happened, an 80-year-old lady because she had just gotten married for the fourth time. The interviewer asked her questions about what it felt like to be marrying again at 80, and then about her new husband's occupation. He's a funeral director, she answered. The newsman then asked her if she wouldn't mind telling him a little about her first three husbands and what they did for a living. She paused for a few moments, needing time to reflect on all those years. A smile came to her face, and she answered proudly, explaining that she had first married a banker when she was in her 20s, then a circus ringmaster when in her 40s, and a preacher when in her 60s, and now in her 80s, a funeral director. The interviewer looked at her quite astonished and asked why she had married four men with such diverse careers. I married one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready, and four to go, she said.
A kind-hearted English bishop one day observed a woman laboriously pushing a baby buggy up a steep hill. He offered his assistance. When they reached the top of the hill, in answer to her thanks, he said, "Oh, it's nothing at all. I was delighted to do it. As a reward, may I kiss the baby?" "Baby? Lord bless you, sir. It ain't no baby. It's the old man's beer." So.
Oh, boy.
Your turn.
This is one of my favorites. It's not the most spiritual joke in the world, but it's still funny, I think. A well-to-do elderly man in Florida bought a brand-new Corvette and took off with it down a highway. He reached speeds of 90 miles an hour and soon heard the sirens of a police car chasing him. The Florida state trooper finally caught up with him and pulled him over. The state trooper said to him, "Sir, I clocked you at 90 miles per hour. Now it's late on Friday, and I'd like to get home to my family. I've heard all the excuses in the world, but if you can tell me one I've never heard before, I'll let you go without a ticket." The old man replied, "Well, sir, 11 years ago, my wife ran off with a Florida state trooper, and I was afraid you were bringing her back." "Have a good day, sir," said the trooper. I still laugh at that one.
A doctor who had a reputation for helping arthritic patients had a waiting room full of people. A little old lady, completely bent over in half, shuffled in slowly, leaning on her cane. When her time came, she shuffled into the doctor's office and emerged within half an hour, walking completely erect, her head held high. A woman in the waiting room walked up to the little old lady and exclaimed, "It's a miracle. You walked in bent in half, and now you're walking erect. What did that doctor do for you?" "Miracle, schmiracle," the little old lady replied. "He gave me a longer cane." So.
A visitor to Israel attended a concert at the Moscovitz Auditorium and was impressed with the architecture and acoustics. He asked the tour guide, "Is this magnificent auditorium named after Chaim Moscovitz, the famous Talmudic scholar?" "No," replied the guide, "it is named after Sam Moscovitz, the writer."
"Yes."
"Never heard of him," the visitor said. "What did he write?" "A check," the guide replied.
Actual questions and answers recorded.
You're not supposed to laugh at your own jokes.
Why not? Actual questions and answers recorded by a court reporter. Attorney. Doctor. Before you performed the autopsy, did you check for a pulse? Doctor. No. Attorney. Did you check for blood pressure? The doctor. No. Attorney. Did you check for breathing? Doctor. No. Attorney. So then, it is possible that the patient was alive when you began the autopsy? Doctor. No. Attorney. How can you be so sure, doctor? Doctor. Because his brain was sitting on my desk in a jar. Attorney. I see. But could the patient have still been alive nevertheless? Doctor. Yes, it is possible that he could have been alive and practicing law. So.
This actually happened, this one. At a linguistic conference in London, England, Sam Sunder Balgobin, a Guyanese, was a clear winner when he answered the following challenging questions. Some say there is no difference between the word complete and the word finished. Please explain the difference between complete and finished in a way that is easy to understand. Balgobin rose to the occasion with this answer. When you marry the right woman, you are complete. But when you marry the wrong woman, you are finished. And when the right one catches you with the wrong one, you are completely finished.
Yes.
He got a standing ovation.
If, this one's titled If. If you can start the day without caffeine, if you can resist complaining and boring people with your troubles, if you can eat the same food every day and be grateful for it, if you can understand when your loved ones are too busy to give you any time, if you can take criticism and blame without resentment, if you can conquer tension without medical help, if you can relax without alcohol, if you can sleep without the aid of drugs, then you are probably the family dog.
Yeah, right. A chronic hypochondriac went to his doctor for his annual physical. Doctor, he said, remember those voices I told you I kept hearing in my head? Well, I haven't heard them in a week. That's wonderful news. I'm so happy for you, the doctor exclaimed. What's wonderful about it? The hypochondriac replied. I'm afraid I'm losing my hearing.
Yes. And after telling one of his many jokes to his cabinet, President Lincoln said, gentlemen, why do you not laugh? With the fearful strain that is upon me day and night, if I did not laugh, I should die. You need this medicine as much as I do. And that gets us to the theme of what we're doing, right? That there is great healing power in humor. There is great healing power in prayer also.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You have one more?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but I know President Reagan had a fantastic sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And he also collected Russian jokes. And there's a story about him. I didn't put it in the book, but there's a story about him. It is in here.
Page 205?
Yeah. He says, this is his story. An American and a Russian were talking. The American said, in America, I can go to the White House, pound on the president's desk, and say, I don't like the way you're running the country. The Russian replied, "I can do that. I can go to the Kremlin, walk into Gorbachev's office, pound on his desk and say, I don't like the way President Reagan is running the country."
Right, right.
Oh, yeah, he had a great sense of humor. John Kennedy had a wonderful sense of humor. You know, what troubles me is in our society, Father Ron, is that one of the things that troubles me is that there's so much polarization, incivility, not only on social media, but in our political lives and every different way. It troubles me that we're almost in danger of losing our sense of humor, you know. It seems to me that I sometimes ask myself, being a former newspaper reporter, an AP reporter, you know, whatever happened to the good news? You know, the gospel is the good news. But, you know, we seem to have an avalanche on both through the news media and through the social media. It seems to me like we're beset by an avalanche of bad and ugly news, and I think it's affecting our society. I remember in the days when I was a newspaper reporter in Michigan and New Jersey and New York, we had it was our job, you know, the newspapers to challenge power and corruption and in high places and what have you. That was an important service that we did, and to challenge politicians or whoever. But we also had a sense we saw the newspaper as the glue that held the community together. So we, of course, we reported the bad news, but we also sought out and published and looked for the good news in the community, the wonderful things that people were doing. You know, the wonderful thing that churches and pastors were doing, miraculous healings, helping the poor, helping the sick, all kinds of different activities that the churches and the synagogues and the temples were doing, and the mosques.
Cal, we just have 1 minute, so go ahead, but 1 minute.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I just think we need to get a little more balanced in our reporting in terms of we ought to report a lot of the good things that are happening. I know we reported in all of these things, wonderful things that are going on, the churches and the pastors are doing in the joyful noise. We send them to newspapers and wire services, but we always think they're going to pick these wonderful stories up, but they don't touch them. They're just so focused in on the bad news, I think we've got to balance. I think the news may have to balance things out a little better, you know, than they have been.
Our guest this evening has been Cal Samra, talking about his latest book, In Pursuit of Health and Longevity: Wellness Pioneers Through the Ages. Cal, thank you very much for being with us, and I look forward to the next time we get together again.
Thank you so much, Father Ron. God bless you. We love you.
Good. God bless you. We love you, too. Good night.
Good.
A lot we could say at this particular point. There is a lot to say about laughter. Maybe this is the clown's prayer. As I stumble through this life, help me to create more laughter than tears, dispense more happiness than gloom, spread more cheer than despair. Never let me become so indifferent that I fail to see the wonder in the eyes of the child or the twinkle in the eyes of the aged. Never let me forget that my total effort is to cheer people, make them happy, and forget at least momentarily all the unpleasantness in their lives. And in my final moment, may I hear you whisper, when you made my people smile, you made me smile. In my final moment, speaking to God, may I hear you whisper, when you made my people smile, you made me smile. Comes the end of our program then. Don't forget how precious life is and how powerful love is. Hopefully we can understand that a little bit better after a program like this. Tell someone now that you love him or her. Pray for peace as if it depended on you alone. And come back next Sunday and amplify with us.